I think I was the first DJ in the Jazz Tuesday genre, which came when Lewis just said, well, why don't we used to have some jazz on here. Why don't you start a jazz program? And I said, swell. And as I say, that was some time ago. Jazz for me was one of those things that sort of came into my world. I wasn't sure what I was. I don't think it was a name so much. It was just, there was some music I really liked. Some of it was Fats Waller, and Your Feet's Too Big, and these sort of clown songs, but he was also a wonderful piano player, just marvelous piano player. And so Your Feet's Too Big flipped on with me. And then sort of from the other end of it, it was the Benny Goodman Band. What for that time was a very long solo by Gene Krupa on, it must have been a 12-inch record, vinyl record. Anyway, and one side of that was Gene Krupa doing Sing, Sing, Sing. And that was, in its own way, a marvelous recording. And then there were other things in that period. We were up in the Bay Area for a while, and my grandmother liked to go hear music. And I probably would have been, I don't know, maybe 13, 14, something like that. And San Francisco World's Fair, they had big bands playing there. And so it would be Tommy Dorsey and I don't know whether Duke Ellington may have been there, but very good big bands. And we would take our bag lunches and go out to Treasure Island in San Francisco and listen to these big bands playing. And that was exciting and great. So those were the sorts of things that got me going. I was taking piano at the time, and what you call standard piano. And then when I got to high school, started playing some other music, some jazz. We had a terrible jazz trio called the Slimy Goo Trio, and it may have been about the worst in Southern California. We had a bass player, and Tom McTilton and Jerry Simpson on drums. And
you on piano.
And I was on piano, and as I say, I'm glad we weren't recorded. Although, actually, I think I might enjoy it. It would give me a sort of dull horror to imagine what we might have been doing. But that was sort of this, what got me into actually playing and then listening. There was a lot of good music coming into San Francisco at that point, and in Oakland, too. So you heard an awful lot of people. Some wonderful, memorable times, listening to Art Tatum, just marvelous. One of the most exciting evenings that I ever had. It was just before exams, and I thought, do I cram for exams or go hear Art Tatum? Made the right choice.
I think so.
Yeah.
So how did you come to be at UC Riverside? You said you were teaching history here, right?
And yes, I was teaching up at San Francisco State, and a professor said to me, well, there's a job opening in Riverside for a year, but why don't you go down? It might last for longer than a year. And it lasted for a lot longer than that. I started here teaching Russian history, and Western Civ program. I was involved in that theory of history, philosophy of history. I'm not a publisher, but I've been really interesting and fruitful time teaching. I really enjoy doing it. And, also, it's always frustrating teaching. You always wish you did better, wish you knew more, all those things.
That's really neat.
It was great. Really liked it.
So, and I feel like for me personally, as a jazz fan and as a listener of Jazz Tuesday for more than a few years now, I've always really appreciated that aspect of what you all do individually and collectively is sharing what is really, what strikes me as a very unique wealth of knowledge and experience in the genre. And you can feel, I feel that you can distinctly hear the passion for the music that you have when you're doing these presentations on a weekly basis. What is it about jazz music that draws you to it and that keeps you coming back every week?
Well, possibly in some way, maybe because it is part of American culture, and of course, to a considerable extent, black culture, but it's all for all of us, and now it's for all the world. But it just touches me, hits me personally in ways that when I put the music on today, there was Billie Holiday, and she always gets to me. Always. But there are a lot of times like this, wonderful saxophone solos that just sort of stay with you. And one of the wonderful experiences when I was a teenager, I was in New York City with my father, and I said, we ought to go hear some jazz. And he sort of looked at me, and so I kind of dragged him, and we went down to 62nd Street in the Three Deuces. And there was a drummer I much admired, Big Sid Catlett, a superb drummer. But a black man came in and played trumpet, and I just hadn't heard trumpet sounding that way. And it was Miles Davis, and it was 16 years old. He just hit me as sounds that still every time move me when I hear Miles. Wow. So that's the kind of thing that still lives with me in jazz. Yeah,
it's it evokes a feeling, like a sentiment, memories. Right?
Well, I think it's more than memories. It's it comes at you in a timeless way, and it just there it is, and it's wonderful, really wonderful.
I hear Dr. J say all the time, he loves to throw out there about how this is one of America's great indigenous art forms. But as you said, it's very much, it very quickly and has been and remains a part of the world.
Absolutely.
Do you think as you described it, the timeless nature of the music, do you think that might have something to do with it? Just the way... Lee Farley earlier described it as it was a spark that resonated in a way, really took the world by storm. I mean, a lot of very significant European, Asian, other, I mean, they're jazz musicians from all around the world. What do you think that's about?
Yeah, I think it does touch in many ways something that's, well, good music is universal, really, you know. For some reason, driving in today, I was thinking of some Elizabethan songs. For some reason, they came to my mind. They still, I'll cease my wandering eyes, strange beauties to admire. And I was thinking, well, this is, it is just wonderful to have this kind of thing going on. And I guess we played briefly in Europe with a harmonica player from Japan, wonderful blues harmonica player, and it's all over the world. It's just great. You know?
Tell us a little bit more about that. You said you were you a keys player primarily? You were able to play some jazz?
My son is a more serious musician than I am, and I went over and joined him in a group called the Lost Wandering Blues and Jazz Band. And we did some street music, and we did a fairly long gig in Sardinia, which was fun, really, really fun. So, and actually, my son, who is still a jazz musician, called me this morning to say, well, I'm off to Paris on Friday. I thought, oh boy, it's a very tough life. He's not making much money, never has. In many ways, it's a lonely life, but it's got its rewards.
Do you think, and this is something that Lee Farley and Lee Farley touched on this morning, and I think is, you know, many have commented on this, but this, the difference between Lee was remarking on how when he spent some time in Europe for a while, he noticed, according to what he was saying, and I, maybe you can back this up as a history professor, many countries in Europe at the time, 50s, the era of jazz moving around the world, I'm thinking, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, he was saying that the documentation of a lot of American jazz musicians is better in Europe than it is here in the United States for a variety of reasons, one of which, maybe not the least of which, being the fact that these were state-sponsored broadcasts. It's non-commercial, essentially, so it's public, public media broadcasting, documenting cultural experiences like jazz concerts and others. But do you think there's a? And he was saying that there's a distinct lack in the United States comparatively in that era in terms of the documentation of a lot of these artists. What do you think? What do you think about that whole the differences and the way? Perhaps documentation has been prioritized in the context of, you know, public versus commercial media.
Well, you know, as you were talking about that, I'm not sure, but I think, for example, the French took jazz more seriously than Americans did, and they took it as a really strange, wondrous cultural force. Which, because it came on them in some ways fresh, they documented it. They had some good critics, and they really took it, I think, very seriously. And with that kind of French analytical mind, they wanted to really pull it apart and then put it back together again. So I think that was one of the things that did it. In Japan, the same kind of thing happened, where jazz, after World War II, became really an important cultural force. It may have been before that, but I don't know. And I was thinking of places in China where people were playing, basically American black musicians were working in Shanghai and places like that. Yeah, so I don't know quite where we started on that, but it just seems to be there. It's a little bit of the music impulse, the art impulse. These are just, I think, somehow in our DNA, and somehow I don't know how, why, but I'm very grateful, very, very grateful.
It's, as you're saying, it's a it seems to be a language that supersedes a lot of other languages. It's something that is relevant. Like you said, it's hard to tangibly identify, you know, like what? So what is it about music that, you know, that draws people to it? But jazz, very obviously, very evidently, is you know, it's a global cultural phenomenon or experience at this point. And I think that really speaks to what you're talking about, just that unknown something within human beings that, you know, it resonates within us as a musician, as a history teacher. What does the experience of jazz have to offer the world, and as time moves on?
Well, I think I wish more. I think it's wonderful to have people have the experience of either listening intently or of playing, and it involves so many things, playing music, part of which is a matter of kind of skills, which I possess to a very limited degree. Part of it is a huge amount of discipline. If you're going to do it, it is really tough. So in some ways, it can offer what you can put into it. You might say, whatever you have, it will take. And I wish more people were going in that direction, just because it's a wonderful thing within the human DNA and a wonderful thing to be able to draw on. And I wish more people were doing it. I wish we had more students doing jazz. I wish we had more jazz, whatever, Jazz Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and not to drive everything else out. But I think it's just a great thing to be exposed to. Classical music, too. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do and to be able to hear.
I've heard jazz described, some ancient, African historic, rhythms and sort of generational musical traditions, synthesized with in many forms of Western classical music, and sort of put together and coming out of the cultural experience of, say, like New Orleans, like the French Quarter, where I read stories about jazz coming out of the lobbies of brothels, stuff like that. What are your own personal thoughts on the tradition, the human experience, and jazz as an expression of such? And what role do you see places, non-commercial radio stations like KUCR, playing in disseminating and perpetuating these traditions and these histories?
Well, the way things are going, it seems to me that non-commercial radio has a huge role to play here in university stations, which is they can do things. I listen to the music on some of the DJ shows, and it looks like there are just about 12 things that they play, and some of it's very good. Most of it isn't what I would want to listen to that much, but there's so much good music around. And this, though, is a wonderful way to focus in the music world. As you say, it's partly a very old tradition, picking up on some even older rhythms, I think. I read about the drumming from Africa, is that some of it is still so complex, is so very, very complex, that for conservatory-trained musicians, they have to work to be able to do it, too. It's not just something that... So there's a huge kinds of skills that are involved in this, and that, it seems to me, is one of the things. Many of these skills aren't really valued that much right now, and it seems to me that universities... which can be, in one sense, on the outer edges of various kinds of research, need to be out, stay out in these outer edges of where culture still lies and lingers. And I think what's happening in music now, who knows what it's going to be like 20 years from now. And, okay, so maybe 20 years from now people will say, well, those were sort of dark ages of music once again. But I don't believe that there will be dark ages of music for very long. It just seems to me that it's so much in the human DNA, I'll just say, that it's like painting and art, and it's there. So universities are, in one sense, keeping this going in an area and in a time when commercially there's not a heck of a lot in there for it.
As you're saying, in the musical commercial mainstream these days, it can be difficult to find programming such as what KUCR does, what you do every week on Jazz Tuesday, I feel that there's a lesson to be learned there. Just life in general, it's the dollar amount. You can't necessarily put a dollar amount on or a value on things like this, and as you're saying, it's important. I agree. It's important for universities and non-commercial entities to exist that are allowed to preserve and communicate some of these experiences and traditions and stories in genres like jazz. But I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, we don't know where things are going. everybody has some sort of an idea, but it seems to me that one of the things that universities should do, and there are an awful lot of doctrinaire people in the universities, but ultimately there should be an awful lot of voices in music, in literature, in even in subjects, approaching them in different ways, going at it. And then you hope that out of this, people will listen and think, well, maybe that's for me. Maybe I can put something from here, something from there, and maybe just do it in their own minds or start doing it, if we won't, maybe even professionally. So it seems to me that what we're heading for, hoping for, is that the universities are places where, despite the fact that many things are sort of controlled and contrived, where this kind of exploration and personal evaluation can go on. And so that what you hope is, just as a musical listening can be a major experience for someone, so people should listen and learn, and insofar as universities encourage people to do that, they're doing an absolutely vital thing for the so-called preservation of the human race.
I agree. It's interesting how often I was during my time as a grad student here on campus at UC Riverside, I was a tutor for a program for underprivileged, or what are termed underprivileged youth, and there was a very short essay that the students had to read one time. It really surprises me how often that small piece of reading comes back to me. I mean, it was just you know, in a fairly insignificant assignment that I gave at one point, but it was a short essay, and I have no idea who the author was, but it was basically saying, the long and the short was that this inner kind of interstitial space where people are allowed to creatively explore, you know, the realms of, you know, knowledge and experience and stuff like that, it was basically saying how critical that those kind of zones, those kind of spaces are for, you know, the enrichment of our individual and collective human experiences in,
absolutely,
in this world.
Absolutely.
I feel like that, and it strikes me personally, it jazz in and of itself in many ways is one of those spaces where people go to explore creatively and communicate creatively. I grew up, you know, I really appreciated not just the music, but also sort of some of the more, I guess, political aspects of certain careers. People like Charles Mingus, you know, and others. I mean, Duke Ellington was very outspoken about certain things. John Coltrane, you know, Nina Simone, some of these artists. I really appreciate their social impact as well as their musical contributions. Do you have any thoughts on that realm, and how music can impact and have an influence on the direction of, you know, collective human experience and history?
I'm pausing for a moment to think about that. I think music has obviously been used to sort of excite crowds to madness. And, I mean, there's some bad things that have been connected with music and the use of music. And I think it's probably good to remember that, because it can be a dangerous force. It doesn't have to always be benign. And so I think that when you're talking about what appeals to music, it's such a broad range. And so in a culture like ours, I think it has really helped to be a bridge from various parts of the culture, between various groups of people. And so people Latin music, black music, various forms of religious music. All these things have come together in some ways to enrich the experience and the culture, and it's the kind of openness that you would hope to see in a political process too, where people can listen to each other and learn from each other. So I think some of that spirit is something that really needs to be developed for the political well-being. And some of that spirit definitely resides in this musical world of jazz, which crosses so many borders and has brought so many different traditions and peoples together. It's a wonderful opportunity, really, to participate by listening or playing in something extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary.
Just one more way to communicate, and perhaps one of the most effective ways to communicate music in general. Like you say, there's a lot of different kinds, and it's a global, human phenomenon and experience that, as you're saying, can exercise a lot of power for good and in good and sometimes bad ways. And I think that's a really important lesson to keep in mind. You know, just the potentiality of different things and what we do with them, and to be conscious of that. And for me personally, jazz has definitely, I feel like, helped me learn some things in that respect. And I like to think, hopefully, I can keep learning some more as I keep listening. But the one last question I want to ask is, I just want to know what one of your favorite experiences has been, either, you know, at a show or playing a show or something like that, just live experiences with jazz. Also any closing thoughts you have.
Okay, well, it's sort of hard sifting back. I mentioned one experience, which was listening to Art Tatum, that I had heard on records, and at times he seemed to me too elaborate and too much of this or that, but a wonderful musician. And then I just go in and listen to hear him, and I guess probably two or three hours staying for a couple of sets. It was just a marvelous experience of having a world open up for you, thinking what a prodigious thing it was. On the other end of it, Billie Holiday, San Francisco, in a small club on Bush Street with a not very large crowd. She was singing, and she has sung better at other times. This was not her night, but she's still wonderful. And then during the break, I was out having a cigarette, she was out there having a cigarette, and we sort of watched the cars go by late at night in San Francisco, and I was thinking, what a lonely world, in part, this is. I mean, there she is, okay, she's an international star. She's had huge problems. And she's out here having a cigarette, and she's alone with herself, whatever that means. And that, for some reason, the other side of celebrity and the loneliness, that really struck me. That was one of the memorable experiences that I've had.
Thanks. Any closing thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, I'm still glad to be doing jazz. Still grateful for KUCR and to all the people here, to you and Lewis. I think it's an institution that is a really fine one.
Well, thanks very much, Bob, for taking the time. Oh, we appreciate it.
Sure.